a regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. You know, we've been doing Mondays with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio, but yesterday we had Alan Beck on the program talking about the Wolford versus Lopez case. Alan, obviously the attorney who will be representing the plaintiffs in that case before the Supreme Court here in a few months. So we did not have a chance to talk with Mark Walters. So I invited Mark to join us for a Tuesdays with Mark segment. It turned out to be a great conversation, a freewheeling conversation that touches on that Supreme Court case, as well as what's going on in the city of Chicago in terms of a violent crime and the Trump administration's crime fighting efforts in the Windy City. Take a look and a listen. Mark, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you, sir.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. It's been this is the second Tuesday with Mark that we've had instead of a Monday with Mark. But we had Alan Beck on the program yesterday talking about the case that the Supreme Court agreed to hear, Wolford versus Lopez, the challenge to Hawaii's vampire rule, where it flips the script, right? I mean, Georgia, Virginia, same law. It's the same law in, I think, 45 states, right? If you are a concealed carry holder, you can carry on private property unless that signage is posted or unless, you know, these locations are specifically carved out as gun-free zones. But if, you know, if you're going to a restaurant or someplace like that, the proprietor doesn't want concealed carry on the premises, they post a sign. In Hawaii, California, three other states, I think New York, Maryland, maybe New Jersey, it's different, right? Concealed carry is banned everywhere unless a business owner posts a sign that says, okay, gun owners are welcome. I'm curious. We're not going to stay on this topic, but were you surprised the Supreme Court agreed to hear this case? This is, you know, I was talking with Alan yesterday. This isn't at the injunctive stage. This has not been fully tried on the merits, like we saw with Snope, that was denied. This case is yet to be fully briefed and tried on the merits, but the Supreme Court is still taking this case at a pretty early stage here.
Yeah, very unusual, right? I was surprised until I wasn't, if okay. That makes sense. Let me explain what I mean by that. If you go back and look at what Kavanaugh wrote in the refusal to take the Fourth Circuit case out of Maryland in the assault weapons ban case, and he threw hints that the Supreme Court was going to take a future assault weapons ban case. Well, that term is already beginning this week. So are we going to see that case pop up this year or next year? Is this an indication that they're moving more to what is Thomas famous for saying, right? The Second Amendment is not a second class right. Okay. So I was surprised because it's to me, it seemed to come out of nowhere fast, right? Because mm-hmm. we're not even at the stages you were talking about. So to me, it was a little unusual. And then when I looked and I read it, it made sense to me why they took it. I think they're laying the groundwork here. I think they're laying the bedrock. They're laying the foundation. These are questions that have to be answered by the Supreme Court, and they know it. Now, we could have so much fun talking about this. Maybe, just maybe, Thomas is getting at the end of his rope, right? Maybe he wants these cases. So maybe that's why they're fast-tracking these cases, so that he can lay this groundwork down as part of his legacy, because you know he wants to write these decisions. I would not be shocked to see Thomas write this decision. And as you pointed out, we talked a few months back here on your show, Kavanaugh, maybe, you know, Mark Smith was talking about how Kavanaugh might write the assault weapons ban decision based on, you know, the way he wrote that I can't call it a dissent, but his commentary on the follow up to that. But, you know, you're right. Look at what happens in these states where this script is flipped. OK. I have a really difficult time when I'm in Arizona going out to eat anywhere in Scottsdale because there's a sign on virtually every restaurant door that bans me from carrying a gun. Even if there's not, I can't carry the gun unless I have my permit on me, which I have, even though you don't need a permit in Arizona. Walk with me here, guys. It gets confusing. But if you're going to walk into a restaurant that serves alcohol, which is every restaurant on earth,
right?
At least everyone in Scottsdale, Arizona, you have to have the physical card in your hand. Constitutional carry rights don't apply to you if alcohol is being served. You still can't drink in that restaurant, but you can carry with your card. If you're constitutionally carrying, you're not even allowed in the restaurant. It's a convoluted mess.
Yeah.
So I find myself doing what I hate to do. That's a wink and a nod. Leaving my gun back at the hotel. Okay. Or maybe carrying a smaller gun. All right. It's very confusing to a lot of people. These questions have to be answered. But the biggest one, and I like to use this example, I'm all about private property rights. I'm a homeowner. Sure. I own my business. If I don't want you parking a green truck on my property to come visit me in my studio because I don't like green trucks, you ain't getting in the door and you're going to move your truck off my property. I have a right to do that. However, there's a difference. My property is not open to the public. I am not serving the public who I am asking to come to my establishment. Now, this argument could go in a lot of different directions. Doesn't change the fact it's still private property.
Right.
Right. You still have an owner of the restaurant who says, I don't want guns in my shop. Okay. But the Supreme Court's going to have to answer this. It's going to be fascinating to see how this case is decided. It really is.
So yeah. I am too. And this is the first sensitive places case that the court has taken since Bruin. Mm-hmm. But you know, to your point, I mean, we talked about this with Alan yesterday. Like there's virtually no chance the Supreme Court's going to come out and say, you know, private property owners can't ban concealed carry from their property, right? The question is, how do they go about doing that? And mm-hmm. Pretty clearly, the historic tradition is that these spaces are open by default to people who are exercising their Second Amendment rights. And if the private property owner doesn't want that, then they need to give notice to that effect. These states are, that currently have these vampire rules in effect. These are outliers, not only in current day, but these are outlier laws in, the national tradition of firearms ownership. Alan right. says basically the only historic twin that the Ninth Circuit could point to was a law, I think it was from 1865, part of the Louisiana Black Codes put in place right after the Civil War. Alan pointed out Louisiana had not been readmitted to the Union at that point, so they weren't even officially a state. This was just right. sort of kind of an extrajudicial law that banned people from carrying on any private property unless they had the property owner's permission. And that was pretty clearly designed to stop, freed slaves from bearing arms at a time in which their lives were threatened. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a slam dunk case. I think this is maybe one of those cases. I don't know if we're going to get a unanimous decision like we saw with Smith and Wesson versus Mexico, but I could see this being 7-2. I could see this maybe even being 8-1 because this is such low hanging fruit, right?
It is. Yeah.
And it's but you're right. This lays the groundwork for them to then go back and look at other sensitive places going forward. And hopefully, knock on wood, that that's going to be the case.
Let me jump in here real quick because you're right. The picture is here's what's likely going to happen across the fruited plains. This is my guess. In the state of Georgia, I can go virtually anywhere with my gun. Now, if you remember, it was SB 386 a number of years ago. It was adoringly referred to as the Guns Everywhere Bill by the Guns Everywhere Bill. Well, yeah, because you should be able to carry your gun everywhere as far as I'm concerned. And here in the state of Georgia, we can essentially do that. You've got the regular sensitive places, a courtroom, courthouse, law enforcement, that kind of thing. Other than that, you can carry a firearm here. And you see very few, if any, signs barring concealed carry in any place that's open to the public. I can name a couple right off the top of my head. Jared's and K Jewelers, which I don't frequent anyway. Those are really the only two that I've ever seen. Now, Waffle House, based in Norcross, Georgia, has a sign up on their outdoors. Nobody pays attention to it, including the management. I've eaten openly carrying in a Waffle House more times than I care to count. So I think what's going to happen here is, depending on how the Supreme Court words this, you're just going to see businesses just begin to accept that this is just a way of life because they're not going to want to walk away from your dollars. And that's what's happened here in this state. And we do not have to put lift kits on our trucks and our Jeeps and our cars to drive through the rivers of blood because the naysayers and doom and gloom, it just doesn't happen. And I think that as that groundwork becomes laid in across these states, they will fight. These blue states will fight us every, they will. They will come up with concoct some law to try to get around whatever the Supreme Court says, because I'm with you. It's a slam dunk. I think you're being a little bit more optimistic than me with the 8-1. I could see 7-2 on this. And that even might be a little optimistic in today's political climate. You never know. However, I do think it's a slam dunk. I do think we win the case. So it's going to be fun to watch.
It absolutely will be. Now, one of those, places that one of those cities that does have a lot of gun-free zones, not quite as bad as New York or Los Angeles or Honolulu, but still plenty of them. Chicago, Illinois, right? Illinois, the last state in the union to actually adopt a concealed carry law. They did that because they were trying to keep a case away from the Supreme Court, right? The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals said, Illinois' complete ban on the carrying of firearms violates the Second Amendment. And the gun control groups prevailed on the governor of Illinois, the mayor of Chicago. Please don't fight this because we don't want to set nationwide precedent. So instead, Illinois adopts a pretty restrictive shall issue law, right? But the last I saw, and this was a couple of years ago, Mark, there are now over 30,000 concealed carry permits in Cook County, Illinois, which is a good start, shall we say, right? But there's still plenty of violent crime taking place in Chicago, which has become a flashpoint between, you know, J.B. Pritzker, Brandon Johnson, the mayor of Chicago, the Trump administration, deploying law enforcement resources. And you picked up on something interesting at the White House press briefing yesterday, right? Involving one of our mutual friends, A.W.R. Hawkins.
Yeah, A.W.R. Hawkins. I had gone to Arby's because, you know, I'm on medication for my blood sugar and it keeps me from eating. It's Mounjaro. I've been on this stuff for years. And for some reason, I wanted an Arby's sandwich yesterday. I'll tie this all together. But I got back and they gave me the wrong sandwich. I just got mad and I flipped on the tube and there was the press briefing. So I sat and watched it, and within seconds, I see Caroline Leavitt, who's a friend of mine and AWR's. We both know her. And she, at the press briefing, she starts referring to Chicago, and she says, look at this report today. And she holds up a piece with the head, reads the headline. Well, it wound up being AWR's piece at Breitbart that she was holding up in the White House press briefing, which I thought was fantastic. I contacted AWR, went, rewound it, got him the video, sent it to him. He was all excited about it. I said, don't come out of your shorts yet because you're still not famous in Cambodia, okay? So don't let your head get too big. But the point that I'm making with this is this is the highest echelons of our government that is, in fact, paying attention to the very things that you and I talk about every single day. And that made me feel really good. And it made me feel great for my good friend, our good friend, AWR Hawkins, that they were referring to his piece. That was not a one-off. That means they're reading his Second Amendment stories in the White House. And if Carolyn Leavitt read it, Trump read it because she is his mouthpiece. In fact, I could see that conversation here. I want you to talk about this when the reporters ask you about Chicago today. Okay, so we are being heard. And oh my gosh, ladies and gentlemen, viewers, listeners, whatever you are, however you're getting this information today, understand that we're winning this fight. And we have a friend in the White House right now and at that podium that is helping us make our point. And that was really refreshing to see. And I couldn't have been happier for AWR.
Yeah, and AWR's story was about, again, the violence over the past weekend in Chicago, right? I think 5 people killed, 30 injured, right?
Well, the number went up. The number went up, as it always does, when the weekend numbers close up. But at the time, his headline was 30 people shot over Chicago. And she said, and 5 of these were killed. And that is unacceptable. And President Trump wants safer cities. Now, that number did go up. It went up by about 3 or 4, I think. The killed number, from what I saw, went up to 7. Apparently, a couple of those other 30 that were wounded had passed away. But this is just carnage day after day after day in this city. And we look at the reaction from law enforcement being told to stand down and not support their other law enforcement brethren at ICE doing their jobs, coming from the top brass in Chicago. Now, the CPD chief claimed that that didn't happen, although we have the audio tape of them saying it. So he's full of crap. The Fraternal Order of Police is all angry about this. The cops are angry about this. And you wonder why the carnage occurs in Chicago. Now, I can draw no other conclusion than this. They don't mind it because they do nothing to stop it. They are putting their political agenda above the safety and security of their citizens. And the number that is out, we'll go back to AWR as I'm doing my research for the show today. 32,000 people shot in Chicago in the last decade. Now let's play theater of the mind. How many people is that? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to think about a venue that you've been in that holds 32,000 people. It's likely larger than the nearest arena that you visit a concert at. So picture that arena packed to the gills and the field because it's a great concert, loaded with people. It's still not 32,000 people. This is the amount, this is the carnage we're talking about. And the Democrats own every single trigger pull in that city, every single one of them, because they've controlled that city for 100 years, over a century of Democrat run. They can't blame anybody but themselves and their own failed policies. Yet they try every single day and they put up with this nonsense. Meanwhile, you have the black community in Chicago. Look, I'm going to get so bold as to say you might at some point in the near future have a Republican run in that city at some point. I would not be shocked. They have had enough. And Trump is going in to fix it. And I'm going off on a tangent. Angry Mark is out of the box. Thanks for hearing me out. I'll back off.
You said I was optimistic about the Supreme Court. I think you're optimistic about the Republican running Chicago.
It's wishful thinking is all it is.
To your point, no, you're absolutely right. And, you know, they'll blame Indiana's gun laws, right? Mm-hmm. They'll blame lack of federal gun laws, whatever it might be. But, you know, you look at the statistics. You talk about 32,000 people shot over the past decade. I wrote about this at Bearing Arms. The clearance rate for non-fatal shootings in Chicago is about 5%. 95% of the people who get shot and survive never get to face their shooter in court because they're never arrested. I mean, we're not even talking about, you know, getting convicted. We're not talking about plea bargains. 95% of these cases go unsolved. Mm-hmm. So when that's the reality, that 95% of the time you shoot somebody, you get away with it. Of course, it's going to encourage more violent criminals to think that they can get away with their crimes, right? And it's going to make it, it's going to make it easier for them to go out and shoot their armed robbery victim or shoot their carjacking victim because they are emboldened, right? And then if and when they do get arrested, you know, I do a segment every day on this program, Mark, called The Recidivist Report. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know we were going to be talking about Chicago when I found this story, but today's story is from Chicago. A gang member who nearly killed somebody who is going to do about 3 years in prison for almost murdering somebody, by the way, in a weapons free zone.
So
we get back to the efficacy of, you know, these gun free zones, and you can't bring your firearms or knives or whatever onto these places. Again, those laws don't work. The gun control laws that are in place in Chicago, Illinois, are some of the most restrictive in the country. Clearly, again, you look at the toll of those non-fatal shootings and the number of homicides, they're not working either. And what is the Democrats' response? We need to sue Glock, right? So we can ban the sale of Glock handguns. We need to blame Indiana for their gun laws. We need to have, you know, all sorts of federal gun laws, like a ban on so-called assault weapons. Mm-hmm. Never is it about getting tough on violent criminals, right? The Safety Act in Illinois, SAFT Act, has resulted in so many violent offenders being put back out on the streets, even if they've got, you know, multiple criminal convictions to their name. They're released on no bond. They go out, they're arrested again while they're out, you know, awaiting trial, and still no bond. It has become so difficult to put individuals, and I don't want to put everybody who's arrested behind bars until they go to trial. I don't think that's the solution. But when you've got somebody who's proven to be a danger to the community and they keep getting caught in this cycle of arrest, release, arrest, release, arrest, release before they even go to court, that's a problem. And that's exactly what are you talking about? This is what Illinois lawmakers have put in place. Yep. These are what Democrats in Illinois have voted for. And I hope to God we're going to see a wake up call, not only in Chicago, but some of these other Democratic strongholds. Not that there are that many outside of Chicago and Illinois, but something's got to change. And
well, I don't know did you see the report out of Baltimore earlier today? Really fascinating. It's right along the lines of what we're talking about. Baltimore has gone and moved in the direction now of minimum mandatory sentences, minimum mandatory 5 years. They've reduced their murder rate by some really impressive numbers.
Yeah.
Now, Baltimore, very dangerous city. Okay. Now, I don't know. I'd have to go back and make some comparisons. But if you look for, I think they were talking 23 and 24. The numbers are down 22 to 26% in murders. And what they're doing is they're going after the recidivism is what you're talking about.
Yep.
If you're a violent felon with a quote unquote illegal gun charge, they are actively seeking you out, charging you with whatever crime they want. And because of that particular charge and previous background, it's now a minimum mandatory 5 years in the slammer with zero parole. They're putting people in jail and they're watching their numbers drop significantly. Good for Baltimore for at least taking that position.
Right. But again, that's a smart approach. I mean, you go back to Baltimore in the late 1990s when Martin O'Malley was the mayor there, and he had this idea. We're just going to, you know, we're going to flood the zone with police. We're going to make as many arrests as possible. I think in a 1 year period, they had something like 800,000 arrests. There were only like 600,000 people who lived in Baltimore. Yeah. And the murder rate went up, right? Because they're arresting people for all these ticky-tack offenses. What you're talking about, going after violent offenders, we know that the majority of violent crime committed by a very, very small number of individuals, right? And these are people who are well-known to law enforcement. They have lengthy criminal records. Focus on those individuals, and you can reduce violent crime dramatically, right? It's when you start making it difficult for the average person to protect themselves. When you start in New York, you know, we're seeing Dexter Taylor, 10 years in a maximum security prison for making his own guns, right? Just a pure possessory offense. Like, that's not how you fight violent crime. That's not how you reduce violent crime. You go after the people who you know are committing these violent offenses. You throw the book at them. And I'm glad to see they're doing that in Baltimore. I just wish they weren't punishing people who are trying to exercise their Second Amendment rights at the same time in the state of Maryland.
Yeah, well, there's that. Okay. It's a Democrat run place. It's always a Democrat run city, ladies and gentlemen. Always look it up yourself. Don't take Mark's word for it. Don't take Cam's word for it. Look it up. What I found interesting in those numbers too, Cam, was of that group of violent offenders that they're locking up, 40% of those people also became, over time, murder victims themselves. So a large percentage of that violent group was also murder victims. So what they're seeing is it's keeping people alive that may have been dead by locking them up in the slammer. Okay. And let's face it. Well, I can't say you're going to get clean in the slammer. Somehow they get drugs in there and everything else. But for the most part, you do. You know, maybe it changes people's lives. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. I mean, I can't get in the mind of a psychopath, you know, psychotic killer. I don't know how these guys operate. I don't understand it. But at the same time, it's working right now, at least the report that I saw today. And if you want to read, I think it was Fox News that had it up. I'm not sure. But go take a look at it. It was an interesting take coming from Baltimore. Why can't Chicago do that?
I mean, they can.
Where there's a will,
there's a way. Exactly. Right.
Because it doesn't serve their political interest, which to me is the very definition of evil. So I'll just leave that at that. But that's evil when they know they can stop it and they choose not to. And people are dying in the streets. I'm hopeful, very hopeful that the uprising that we are seeing in Chicago supporting Trump, these people want victims, want the crime victims, want Trump and ICE. And they're cleaning up their streets like they did in Washington, D.C. They're screaming for the help. It's the political leadership that's not. These are evil people. They just are.
Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. Listen, man, I appreciate you joining us on the program. As always, folks can catch the Daily Defense and, of course, the big Sunday Night Monster Cast, armedamericanradio.com. Is that the best place to find it?
That's the best place to find me, 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock Eastern, Monday through Friday, and 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock on Sundays. Looking forward to having you back on as well.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon. Mark Walters joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks to Mark for joining us on the program, as always. Looking forward to seeing him back here again very soon. As I mentioned, let's get to today's recidivist report, since we talked about it on during the interview with Mark. Here's the headline from CWB Chicago. Man gets 6 years for nearly killing gang rival at Loop CTA station. That 6 year sentence, though, is not really a 6 year sentence. A CWB Chicago report, Vidal Harazzo, with credit for time served as well as good behavior, is expected to be released after serving 3 years. But because he's already spent some time behind bars awaiting trial, one of the few cases, by the way, in which someone was not granted bond in Chicago, he is scheduled to be released on June 4th of next year. June 4th, 2026. Now, it was June 16th, 2023, when this attack actually took place. Prosecutors say that Harazzo attacked a rival gang member after a brief hostile exchange at the Roosevelt Red Line station on June 16th, 2023. Harazzo apparently had walked out of a train. He flashed a gang sign as he passed the victim on the platform. The victim, identified as a rival gang member, responded with his own gang gesture, which led to an altercation. Prosecutors say the victim in this case pulled out a knife, but then put it away before punching Harazzo in the face. Harazzo then allegedly drew his own knife, chased the man down the length of the platform, stabbed him repeatedly in the head, once in the arm. Victim reportedly lost like 2 liters of blood, suffered injuries that limited mobility on his left side. It affected his ability to speak, permanent brain damage. In other words, Chicago police officers responded to the scene, found Harazzo still engaged in the assault. He allegedly tossed the knife onto the train tracks and then told officers the victim, quote, should not have effed with him, which is, sure, I agree. The victim, you know, punched Harazzo, but the victim then ran away. And at that point, the threat to Harazzo was over, and Harazzo was not acting in valid self-defense when he chased the guy down and then stabbed him repeatedly. So, again, this happened June 16th, 2023. He's going to get out June 4th, 2026. So I'm guessing that Herraza was held without bond immediately after his arrest. But still, 3 years for attempted murder? The judge in this case, Suzanne Ortiz, described the altercation as gang garbage, according to CWB Chicago, saying it leads to nowhere good for anyone that participates or who is involved in it. Sure enough, but it also does nobody any good to put violent felons back out on the street after a slap on the wrist. And I would consider 3 years behind bars for attempted murder a slap on the wrist. I don't know about you. And as I mentioned to Mark, again, this happened in a weapons-free zone. Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals recently ruled that the CTA's policy of barring lawful concealed carry, the state of Illinois' policy of barring lawful concealed carry on public transportation, comports with the Second Amendment, that the founding fathers could not have envisioned these crowded metal tubes. So therefore, this is, you know, an unprecedented societal concern, banning firearms on public transportation, even though there really is no historical analog. It's hunky-dory when it comes to the Second Amendment. Second Circuit ruled much the same thing in a challenge to New York's ban on concealed carry on public transportation. I believe that was the Fry case. And in that case, the Second Circuit essentially said that the test is a place crowded, and is it open to the public? And if both of those things are true, you can ban concealed carry anywhere, which is directly in conflict with what the Supreme Court said in Bruin, that the city of New York could not declare the island of Manhattan a gun-free zone simply because it is generally crowded and also generally protected by police. But again, we are now, we've been watching the courts abuse the Bruin decision for years. Hopefully now that the Supreme Court is starting to weigh in on some of these sensitive places, we will see the court grant cert to one of these cases dealing with gun bans on public transportation. On to today's armed citizen story from the Keystone State of Pennsylvania. Athens Township man dies from gunshot wounds. Police believe it was self-defense. It certainly sounds that way based on the testimony of the shooter as well as other witnesses. The Star Gazette newspaper in Elmira, Pennsylvania reports this happened back on October the 3rd, about 3:40 in the afternoon in the small town of Athens Township. Apparently, a guy named David Hancock and his wife were visiting his wife's ex-mother-in-law. So, whatever, you know, the couple gets divorced, but she stays friends with the mom. Mom invites them over to the house. Well, the mom's son, the ex-wife's former husband, a guy named John Krause, was there as well. And at some point, Krause violently attacks David Hancock. During the course of the confrontation, according to police, Krause threw Hancock to the ground, pinned him on his back, repeatedly struck him in the face and head with closed fists. Witnesses say he then grabbed a picture frame, violently struck Hancock in the head with that frame. When officers arrived, they noticed that Hancock had a serious head injury, was holding a blood-soaked shirt to his head, still bleeding profusely down his face. Hancock is a legal gun owner. He's licensed to carry. He had his firearm with him. He said that he believed that Krause intended to kill him. And so while he is on the ground being pummeled by Krause, Hancock drew his gun, shot Krause twice. He stayed on the scene after Krause was taken to the hospital, cooperated with police. Hancock also later taken to the hospital for treatment to his injuries. According to the paper in Elmira, police pointed to Pennsylvania state law, which says the use of deadly force is justifiable if the person believes it is necessary to protect himself against death, serious bodily injury, kidnapping, or sexual intercourse compelled by force or threat. In this case, again, the victim here was being actively beaten, pinned to the ground, no way for him to get up. And sounds like he did have a reasonable belief that his life was in danger. So police have conducted their investigation. They'll present the results of that investigation to the local DA. But based on everything that's been reported here, I would be absolutely shocked if somebody who was, again, actively being assaulted, seriously bleeding from a head injury, would be charged with a crime for protecting his life under those circumstances. But we'll keep you updated on any additional information that comes out of Athens Township, PA. And finally, today in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a good Samaritan in Rochester, Minnesota, who came to the aid of a stranger who had passed out behind the wheel of a car. This was Monday afternoon. Trisha Summers is the Good Samaritan's name. She's there in Rochester, Minnesota. She said something unique about today. She said, I stayed after her ordinary workout to chat with a friend. And she says, my timing was off by like 20 minutes. So she would not ordinarily have been in this area at that time. But it was just after 10 o'clock yesterday morning when Summers noticed a driver slumped in a running car on the side of the road. And she drove by Summers, who, by the way, is a nurse, said she thought he was sleeping. And then she said, you know, I'm just going to turn around and just make sure. And she said, when I flipped back around, his car had kind of drifted to the middle of the road. Inside the vehicle, there was a 75-year-old man who was unconscious and not breathing. So Summers, who had just passed her CPR certification on Saturday, I guess recertified, started performing CPR. She said within 3 minutes, there were three nurses. There was a nurse practitioner just all there to ready to help and do what needed what was needed to save his life. But Summers, again, performing CPR, she said it was fresh in my mind. I got to send my instructor a little email saying, hey, thanks for passing me off because it got put to good use today. She also told KTTC TV, it's never too late for anybody to become CPR certified. She says maybe it's a little bit of a plus living in this community that you've got a lot of people, very capable people surrounding you. Rochester, Minnesota, obviously a home to, I think it's home to the Mayo Clinic, right? So, yeah, probably a lot of medical folks in the healthcare industry in that area. The status of the 75-year-old man, not known at this time, but Summers did say before he was placed in an ambulance, he did have a pulse, so he was breathing, and hopefully he is on his way to recovery. But, I mean, again, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing just by checking, first of all, right? Just by, man, my spidey senses are tingling. Something just doesn't seem right. Could be sleeping, but I'm just going to go make sure. Just that simple act of caring enough about a stranger led to Trisha Summers saving a life. So in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Trisha Summers, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right. And I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. The litigation, the legislation, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz' attempt to blame Republicans for him not calling a special session in response to the Annunciation shooting when it's entirely up to the governor to do so. But he's somehow still trying to pin the blame on the Republicans there, the legislature. Those stories and a whole lot more are all waiting for you at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. While the government shutdown is going on, we've got a fantastic sale for you right now. Use the promo code POTUS47 and you can get 74% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. All kinds of great benefits at every level of support. Whichever one you choose, we certainly do appreciate you supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. So thanks again. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.